podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello everyone, Forest Focus. Just when you thought you'd seen it all this season, Nottingham Forest Twitter account raised the stakes. Were they right? Is it all a distraction from a team which arguably going down in any other Premier League season and still might be in this one? Joining me to discuss all that is, first of all, Reds fan Greg Mitchell. Morning, Greg. How are you doing?
All right. A bit tired. Bit of a long day yesterday, but yeah, too busy scrolling the internet half the night, but managed to ignore it this morning. So yeah, ready to go.
Yeah, certainly was a long day. I put earlier, we've only been doing this for like 4 months, and I feel like I've been doing it for 4 years. So yeah, it's all happening. Second guest is Michael Temple. Morning, Temps, you well?
Good, mate. You don't need my small talk today. I just want to hear these two boys get aggressive.
Third guest is former Reds midfielder David Prutton. Prutts, good to have you with us. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's a pleasure to be back, chaps. I know it's been a very busy week/weekend, so plenty to chat about.
Certainly is. We'll start with the tweet because I want to get it out of the way and we'll do some VAR.
Which one are you referring to? Oh, got it.
Because I want to talk mostly about the football and what we're seeing on the pitch from Forest. Mark and Mikey said what they thought last night. I said what I thought. I don't think I particularly mellowed on it, but there's a lot of support for it on Twitter. Greg and a lot of people are against it. Just quickly, what's your take on what Forest said?
It was, I'll tell you like how it went down in the ground, really, because walking out the ground, there was a lot of like discontent. I've not seen fans react to the players like that in a while. And that it surprised me a little bit. So Everton's so tight and cramped, and you get downstairs. And by that point, they'd obviously released the tweet and people were starting to get a signal. And it was so weird just seeing all these groups of people just gathering around phones and like looking at it. And as soon as I saw it, I thought, that's not real. Obviously, it's not, that's not from us. That's like some parody account. And then you go on and you realise, and it's like, oh my God, suddenly the game was forgotten about. And you realise this isn't going away very quick. And we were angry with the ref. It was obvious like how poor they'd been and how nothing went to VAR. And so it was weird, and walking back to the car, you just started to see some of the responses and how many views it was getting already. Sky and TalkSport already all over it, and before long, nobody's even talking about the game. Nobody's remembering what happened. So it's huge. I think the implications are going to go long past maybe even this season. I'm still undecided because it is so frustrating. You know, when you go all the way up to Everton or down to Bournemouth or wherever, and you do get such bad decisions go against you with all this technology. You're so frustrated. And the one thing I will agree with Carragher, it kind of was like someone like myself had wrote that tweet, because that's what I was thinking. You know, I was angry and I was upset. So I do have sympathy with the club. I think they'll regret what they've put. I think there needs to be strong people in place to ensure tweets like that don't go out, and they may have to step up against some pretty powerful people in the club to say, we can't send that, I'm sorry, I'm not allowing it, that's my position to do so. I think we need that kind of person in place just to safeguard us and everything else, because there's going to be big fines now. There's going to be things, you know, fans will be upset because, you know, we're being asked to pay a hell of a lot more money in the future, and some of that money's now going to go on wasteful things like this fine. But I do have sympathy with them because it is ridiculous what's gone on this season. 15, 16 times there's been blatant errors, and it can't continue, and the club have run out of things what to do. So I am a little bit on the fence with it. I'm not happy they've put the tweet out, but it's certainly made it interesting and got rid of some of my frustration on the matter.
For me, I think they should hear the footage, ask for the footage to be released to the VAR, ask the Premier League for that or something. But I'm not on board with the tweet personally. What about you, Temps?
The only thing that would have improved Carragher's statement was if he said, this isn't what an official club account should be tweeting. This is the kind of thing Greg Mitchell says. Then I would have had new level of respect for Vicaro. Look, in sports comms, you've got to be very careful because everything's analysed, it's there for life, and the world can comment on it publicly, as has been the case with this thing. There's three things you've got to watch. The message itself. The message that Forrest wanted to get across yesterday is absolutely correct. The refereeing performance was terrible. The VAR intervention was terrible. And even Ashley Young knew in his post-match interview after the game that on another day, he's conceded three penalties there. The second part you've got to watch is the tone. And this is where it starts to go wrong for Forrest, because we did shoot from the hip within 5 minutes of the full-time whistle and put a very emotionally charged message in there, which clearly wasn't as considered as it could have been because it happened like that. And usually this would go through several filters. It'd be go to a, you know, pretty senior comms director or whatever at a club. A tweet of that magnitude has obviously come from someone with authority of or within the ownership group itself. So the tone is far, far away from what you'd expect from a Premier League club. And the third thing is the inference, what's going unsaid beyond the tweet itself. And that points to this, you know, conspiracy theory about the world being against Forrest. It was terrible, terrible, terrible officiating decisions yesterday. I'm not a conspiracy theorist by any means. I think these decisions do happen in every game. But it does feel like we're being somewhat victimised given the frequency and how obvious these decisions are, and how on another day with another individual watching a similar incident on the ground gives a completely different decision. So I do get it. I get the emotion of it. I get the message itself. I agree with it. But we need to behave like the club that we want to become. And I don't think you find a top six club or a top 10 Premier League club being like that. Just doesn't happen. So, yeah, just take the emotion out. Make your point behind the scenes. But, yeah, me as a you know, sports communicator and the Forest fan found the tone and the inference a little bit embarrassing, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, I know people are saying the whole Luton thing about Stuart Atwell. It's like we're holding Stuart Atwell up as some kind of competent referee. And he's absolutely awful. And I think he's been awful for years. And he's been awful against every club. And he shouldn't be anywhere near the Premier League. But there's a clutch of refs that should be nowhere near the Premier League. The standard is absolutely abysmal. The execution of VAR is horrific. And if they can't use it right, they shouldn't use it at all. And for me, I'd go out and recruit the best refs from around the world. We've got all this money. Let's pay it. Because it's absolutely abysmal. But I'm not.
Do you think they'll come over then?
Probably pay them enough. If you pay someone enough to talk about refereeing, they'll do it. So yeah, I think they would. Go on, Greg.
No, it was just one more thing I wanted to add, which I'd forgot about. And Gate 7 International, which Gate 7's like Olympiacos' ultra group, they've got quite a lot of power over there. And they sent a tweet last night which said, English football fans have probably never read an Olympiacos 500-word press relief after a poor reffing performance. This right here is light work. Welcome to Showtime. And I thought, that's so correct. But that's also them saying, you know where this tweet has come from. You know, it's not the club admin. I don't want to say, but they're making it pretty obvious where they think it would have originated from.
What's your take on it, Prats? On the tweet, and should Stuart Atwell have been taken off the game just to avoid this situation above all else?
This reminds me, Greg, of a tweet, little chat we had a couple of years ago when, was it Leeds, Forest against Leeds, and the referee was a Leicester fan, which is... I do kind of stand by that. I think it's utter rubbish to put any form of traction to that. And whether Stuart Atwell supports Luton, Sheffield United, Burnley, whoever it is, that thing of declaring it, and there was a tweet that I read about Michael Oliver saying about refereeing Newcastle and Sunderland games. It's a professional sports we're talking about here. If you can't put that aside, you shouldn't be in it in the first place, if I'm brutally honest. The decisions... I thought the first and the third were messy and debatable enough to at least have VAR, get the referee over to have a look at it. And that's the reason why it's there, as we know. The middle one, what is that natural body position of a fullback where the ball comes over his head? I think there's a broad opinion on what's natural now in the box is your hands behind your back. It's not. Your arms are up for balance. So I think that one's open to debate more than the other two. The fact that the last one where he's just he kicked through that tackle, the one for the third penalty in inverted commas, is the rash tackle of a player on his debut or who's not had 15, 20 years of very high level experience. I don't know what on earth he's doing. And that one, my God, after you've had a day like he's had, drawing more attention to yourself to get away with that one, that's when you're left stunned. The thing that you can't get on board with is like Temps was saying, but I say you can get on board. It depends on how you approach life and the bigger picture and what you deem to be the reason that things happen. The work to use kind of terms like conspiracy theory, corruption, that those terms are used because then it puts reason, meaning and intent behind what happens. Because I think broadly you can get more angry about that because you think, well, someone's done that on purpose. Incompetence is not done on purpose, is it? It poor decision making isn't done on purpose. The officials across the board, from the one in the middle of the pitch, two either side, one in the dugout, and the rest back at Stockley Park, they had a terrible day, an awful day in that game. That sense of decision made play on would exist pre VAR. The fact now we've all got VAR in the Premier League and know normally what's coming, the Man United Coventry game. That's finding a way to rule out a goal. That's not what VAR is for. VAR is a clear and obvious error. That's not a clear and obvious error. That's finding a way to rule out a goal, which is not what it's there for. So when you see what happens in the Everton game with Forrest, I can totally get how infuriated, how angry, how frustrated the fan base is. I think the tweet was not very becoming of what we would deem Nottingham Forest to be. That sounds a little bit twee because there's huge finances at stake. There's a place in the Premier League at stake. The whispers and rumours I heard was that tweet was penned ready to go at half time, but was changed and then ready to go halfway through the second half. And then as the final whistle goes and it gets launched out, I mean, there was someone chucking around a loaded gun there, ready to just fire it and get it out there. But again, it goes back to that inference of it being corruption, which, having been involved in this game since 1998 professionally, I'm willing to stand out and say, I can't believe for 1 second there's any form of that within the game. And if I'm proved wrong in 10, 20, 50 years' time, then I'll look silly, but I'm prepared to look silly because that, you can't have that. You can discuss it in a hopefully quite a calm environment, but yeah, why? Why? Nobody's on the payroll of the Big Six. Nobody's on the payroll of big broadcasting companies to make decisions and keep teams in certain competitions. No one is. For all this to make sense, there has to be intent, doesn't it, for people? For us as a fan base, for it to make sense, well, it's their fault because they want to do it on purpose. Right, there's meaning behind it. I can almost get my head around that. To put it down to, you might fall out of the division through consistently poor performances, consistently poor results. Throw into that very debatable decisions where on another day you would have got a penalty or two or three. That melting pot is a toxic one, which just leads to one thing, which is a team dipping out of a division.
I mean, the only thing that I think, it's not corruption, but I feel like the Premier League is set up for the Big Six and keep them happy in terms of the Super League, you know. They've got a fine. I'm not even sure they've paid yet. I mean, I just feel like it's all set up to keep them sweet. But yeah, I'm with Putz on the rest of it.
In what sense? That's the thing, because the top end of football in the Premier League, the teams are there by virtue of happy coincidence and circumstance. The rules that are in place for when Abramovich took over Chelsea are different to they are now. The rules that are in place when the Sheikh took over Man City are different to they are now. The Sheikh looked at Everton very realistically, a proposition to buy Everton. But because Everton potentially, with the moving of the stadium and thinking that potentially where they are now couldn't get redeveloped, and there was a site apparently on the docks, a different site, which was then earmarked for something else. So then he moves on to Manchester City. Not because he loves Manchester, because it's a vehicle to make money. So a lot of this stuff is sliding doors. It now looks like it retrospectively that it was built like that. But, I mean, Man City were playing Gillingham in the playoff final at the back end of the late 90s, weren't they? So to say it's changed, and the growth of the Premier League, there's a broader debate on this about what it's done to the Football League and what it means to the pyramid as a whole. But That, I mean, talk about trying to ram the toothpaste back in the bottle. What on earth are you going to do? What I don't get it. I don't get how you could change what the apparent status quo is now. I don't get it. Have you got any answers to that? Because you then fall into a place where, I mean, you get into the hypotheticals of what it is. The Forest team that was in the playoff semi-finals under Paul Hart, the loss to Sheffield United. What if they went up and then someone comes in and goes, do you know what? I've got a shed load of money. It's the right time. It's 2003, 2004, 2005. When Abramovich came in, goes, do you know what? I want them. They've won the European Cup back-to-back. They're former league champions. I want them. Another path. Forrester in the Big Six looking down, going to everyone else, oh, shut up, stop moaning. No, it's not a Big Six. We're just get on with it. That's what it is. That's the inherent debate of competition and being in the right place at the right time.
I think for me, it was things like the FA Cup replay situation that showed, you know, that's been done for the Champions League clubs and for money and not consult the EFL clubs.
That's ridiculous. That's terrible. Yeah.
We're getting way off the point. What about the future of, just quickly on the future of VAR? Because I said they need to bin it off. They can't use it. What do you think, Greg?
Do you know, I keep reading about it. Someone put an article up as well about subconscious bias in sport. And it's been proven that it is actually a thing. And I think that more so than yesterday, that's more back onto the top six. And the fact that, you know, if we're 1-0 up against Man City next Sunday, there'll probably be 8-9 minutes injury time, where if it was the other way around, there'll probably be 3 or 4. And it's just little things like that that I thought VAR was going to come in to kind of eradicate and make sure that there's almost a computer behind the scenes telling you what's right and wrong. But all it has done is created more confusion, more mistakes, more talking about this for the first 20 odd minutes of a podcast instead of the football match, which happens probably 50% of the time this time. Back to the original question, though, VAR's never going. It's literally never going. It'll be in the Championship next season or the season after. Eventually, it'll be in all forms of football league, just like there's cameras at every game now. So it's going to be there. It's going to create more jobs, more money, more entertainment, more less of the sport inside a thing and more of the American-style entertainment, which is what I feel the Premier League wants to be now. So I don't think it matters what we want. It's here to stay, and it's just going to cause more controversy.
Again, another tweet that I read in the thread that you put out, Matt, about coming on today, and it'll have been mentioned loads and loads and loads of times. Huddersfield Town is second bottom of the Championship. They had two stonewall penalties in the playoff final. Absolute categorical penalties.
Oh, he's poking the bear here. Wait for these comments here. Here he goes.
Wait for the
time
to explode now. Yeah.
Categorical penalties. Penalties. And we're watching it going, well, it's great because we've got VAR. They'll check it. And you're going, right, so he's not even told to go on. What? And that's, next season, Carlos moves on. Director of football moves on. Players come and go. The club gets sold, someone takes over. They've had three, I've gone as how many managers since. So it doesn't underpin or justify anything that happened in the game yesterday, anything that happened across the season at all. But it goes back to the point where you're asking, Matt, of what does VAR do? There'll be way too much money that's been invested in it, way too much money that is there to be made from it. And they can't. I mean, if you've got the contract to supply VAR, what you're saying? No. We've signed this. This is staying, regardless of what it is. And the football clubs in the Premier League, the 20, they are football clubs, but they're also regarded as stakeholders when it comes to the Premier League. They all agreed on it.
The other thing I hate about it, before I ask Temps, is like that Coventry game yesterday, and I know maybe it was offside, but like little 8-year-old me getting to football in Italia 90, like if David Platt scores that goal, and then my dad says, well, actually, you might find that Platt's arse was slightly bigger than the centre-half's one as he went.
Because he did have a big arse, to be fair, didn't he?
Well, yeah. And then don't celebrate yet. And little old me might have thought, oh, sod this. I'm just going to play Golden Axe and, you know, Revenge of Shinobi until I get into girls or something. But I just think it's killing football, really. And if there's a season where we look back and think, this is where the Premier League lost its magic, or if it ever had it, then this is the one for me. What's your take, Tam?
The commentary one. Sorry, Tam, bumping in on you there. The thing that infuriates you, because it's almost hamstrung itself by using that term of what it's there for, to eradicate clear and obvious errors. The commentary one is not a clear and obvious error at all. At all. And it depends how thick your lines are, or one player's moving that way, the other player's dropping back. It doesn't. That's not what it's there for. And what would be the traditional sentiment of a linesman using his flag would be advantage to the attacking side, which I think we're all fine with that, because football's about goals. It's not about attritional nil-nils and drawing your way to safety. It's about winning football matches. Like you say, Matt, it's what drags you in. The glory of the last minute win. I saw it and just thought, Jesus Christ, that's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. And then you hear, as you're watching the replay, and you think, oh, Christ, they're looking for something to rule it out. And then it's exacerbated with, don't get me on a rant about Man United, you get Anthony cupping his ears to commentary. You get Bruno giving a mouthful to a championship, and I mean that in the greatest respect, to a championship goalkeeper. Love Coventry to bits. What they've done under Mark Robbins, longest serving manager in the second tier, is a phenomenon. But it gives credence to whoppers like that, giving it loads. It's like, come on, mate, you play for the biggest club on the planet. At least, and as much as Harry Maguire gets a load of crap off fans, at least he went over and shook everyone's hand and didn't over-celebrate, because they were disastrous yesterday. And I don't like Man City either, but I hope they win in the FA Cup final. Good night.
I love that Prutz is like that. He's got such love and empathy for every single championship club. He has to apologise when he makes any kind of negative, because whilst we get a little bit of the Forest Twitter world on at us, he's got 72 clubs that give him an earful if anything goes awry. And the subjectivity, objectivity thing, offside and goals, they're factual. So I get why the millimetre matters there, because that's not a person making a decision. That's a subjective fact. An objective fact. The subjectivity of Ashley Young blows my mind, though, because anybody slowing that down from 10 angles can make a call. And even on this unconscious bias, or this, you know, it's in that kind of zone of uncertainty. If it happens three times, you expect to get one. And that's what perpetuates the narrative. Where am I on VAR? We've got to keep it. We were moaning for 15 years, remember, when we didn't have video technology and decisions were going unpunished, unrecognised, and inevitably at different points, our teams were on the wrong end of that. Watching Coventry Man U as a neutral, I thought that was a brilliant 90 seconds of telly. From one end of the ground, losing their whatever, to the decision being inverted, and then the penalties. That was absolute drama and theatre at its best. Everything we love about football. A Coventry win in that penalty shootout would have been one of the best games of the century, I'm sure. However, back to Forest, it has happened too many times. But I don't think our conduct to this point hasn't necessarily helped. Has appointing Clattenburg helped? Is he loved and respected by the current crop of referees? I don't know. He was able to get an article published in the Daily Mail within 3 hours of the final whistle yesterday. And it stirred up this debate and the match of the day analysis and everything else that's happened since then. But we ain't getting those penalties. We're not getting a point or three from the Everton game because of that. What I would prefer, what I would expect to any club that, you know, I was the owner or director of, is to get back to focusing on the pitch. And we haven't mentioned this in 23 minutes. There were reasons we lost that game beyond the Ashley Young incidents. Yes, I think we were due two of those three penalties, but there were failings in our performance. And I think we have to discuss those as well, because what gets us relegated or what keeps us in the Premier League is how we perform across the next four matches.
I'm not clicking. I don't know who's clicking.
I think he's prunched straight in his beard.
No, it's made of real plastic.
I think it was Temps going all, you know, waving his arms around. Is his mic?
I'll stay calm, mate. I'll keep it restrained from now on. No more body language.
Right. I do want to get into our performance, obviously, because I do think that's the biggest talking point, or should be, really, about where we're going. We're 25 minutes in. And we haven't got there yet. Just quickly, a quick word for our sponsors at Trent Navigation. Of course, you can see Rick Parfitt Jr. and his band on Saturday, May the 11th, straight after Forest v Chelsea. It was hoped to be an end of season party, as it's billed here. We'll have to wait and see on that, but I promise you it'll be a good day, I'm sure. Entry is free, of course, and there's food available in the barbecue, with the barbecue and bars indoors and outside. So thanks to Nav for their support as ever. Right. let's get into our performance, and then we'll probably have to discuss if each one was a penalty or not as we do that. What's your general thoughts on the game, Greg? We always kick off with that, and now we're 25 minutes in. What did you make of it when you were there?
It wasn't as bad a performance as some of the away performances this year. We seemed to have a lot of the ball. We seemed to want to use it and get it up, but we just didn't have that finishing touch. We didn't have many, if any, shots on target. And there was just that final third, just nothing there. I thought Hudson-Odoi looked a bit slow on our side. And don't know, defensively, I mean, they scored two goals from, I think they were both outside the box, weren't they? So, you know, to say how they were just going to keep hammering us with crosses, I don't think we were that poor defensively. But it just, we didn't look like we were desperately trying for the win, which was disappointing. And we knew it was going to happen against a Sean Dyche team that we let watch every single one of our games like a guest of honour. So, you know, we've paid for that twice this year now with Sean. Hopefully we'll learn from that next year and don't have him in so many times because he knows our team better than anyone. And I said that after the last game. When we played them as well, but it seems that we're still welcoming with open arms, which is good usually, but not when there are relegation rivals. But yeah, just two decent shots were the difference in the game for two, which looked like very poor teams. It looked like a championship level game, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I suppose, Temps, the big question is how bad were we? Because we did our post-match show. I didn't think we were very good, certainly first half. And we ceded it to Everton too much. But people said we were too harsh on the team. So what was your view on the performance? Was it that bad or not?
Far too passive in central midfield is where it went wrong for me. I think first 30 minutes, couldn't retain the ball, couldn't find the passes, couldn't get any kind of rhythm going, couldn't get Morgan on it in the right spots, had no threat down the right-hand side with Rayner inverted. And that screening pair of Danilo and Dominguez just didn't come off. I'm not here making a case for Yatesy because he was dropped for bad form. There's no two ways about that. But that industry endeavour, the blood and thunder, just wasn't there. And it was highlighted by the two goals, the passive nature of letting these fellas get pop shots off with no one rushing towards them as a Yatesy, as a Makélélé, as a David Prutton would have done, affect that instant in the game. And they didn't. They were ambling. They didn't seem focused. They weren't sprinting towards it, closing down. That's the kind of basics that I'd shout at someone for on a Sunday morning. And we need that. All of the flair players and all of the methods we have, means we have of scoring goals and causing a threat, which has improved under Nuno, I think it's fair to say, is completely undone if you're going to be passive in central midfield and not win your duels at the back. So that's where it was lost for me. I don't think we'll see that access in central midfield from this point on because it just didn't work. And penalties aside, I think that's what we would have been discussing now, is just how lacklustre we were in central midfield.
Yeah. I mean, from a tactical point of view, perhaps, what I didn't understand, we picked an attacking team. I picked the right team, apart from, you can debate Niakate, but for me, it was the team I wanted, so I can't complain about that. But we played really deep against a team that has no pace and is Everton are never going to pass through you. Everton's plan was to lump it long. And I just thought we'd play with so little intensity. I know there's a risk when you go as an away team to press high and really go for it, but I thought with that team, I thought that's what we should have done. What was your take on it from a tactical point of view?
I mean, your eyes are kind of trained towards positions that you'd have spent more time in playing than any other. So you do look in the middle of the pitch. And I mean, it does, as much as tactics and setup and that kind of intellectualization of what a football club and a team needs to look like on a particular day, Everton at home against Forest with the form of both coming into it, with the players available for both and with the managers that we're talking about, with the greatest respect to Forest, relegation dogfight between these two, your banker's on Everton, isn't it, really? Because of who's in charge. And not because he goes about stuff in a slightly more animated way. Nuno's got his way, and that's him as a person. That's what has brought him his career thus far. But as you say, Idrissa Gueye, I mean, at one stage was touted as one of the very, very best, wasn't he, in that particular position across Europe. Gomez, has he got the legs? Not really. Decore, again, questions pointing to him. But that Jack Harrison, Dwight McNeil, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I mean, Calvert-Lewin's not the fittest version of himself at the moment, but they are three people that can cause problems. What you get with Jack is a lot of running, a lot of intensity, a lot of hard work. And I would assume for an Everton side that as a prerequisite in for Sean Dyche, although at times they've looked at, I mean, Monday night, yes, Chelsea have got a superb player in Cole Palmer, but they were awful, absolutely awful. Game before, they were good. So Sean talks about that after the game, going, well, we won two out of the last three. We had a horror show in the middle, but either side, we were good and picked up the kind of points that we're after. But the words that are coming out and listening to yesterday's pod as well, when you legitimately able to put words at midfield and a team in general as passive and kind of lacking energy and endeavour until kind of deep into the second half, then you're in trouble there already. Sometimes I do understand players can be better by virtue of not being inside. Take Yatesy, for example. As I've always said on here, I've got a lot of time for him, a lot of time for him. What he's done in his career to get himself into the Premier League as a Premier League midfielder is wonderful, a testament to hard work, caring about what he's doing, and the dedication to his profession. Not saying any of these players are dedicated, but when you look at that Dominguez-Danilo axis, doesn't necessarily, and it's worked at some times during the course of the season, as has Yates been in there with either or one of them. It's worked, but it hasn't worked consistently. And across the board, none of the combinations, the centre-half pairing hasn't worked consistently because it's changed so much. Whoever's led the line in relation to maybe working with Morgan or Callum or Gio Reyna on one side has worked at times. The reason Forest are in a point off the relegation places is because this team can't consistently perform regardless of who's been put in it. That's why the way they are. And then add into the fact a baffling approach to a game against a side that's in the same situation. Again, that's why you get Forest fans sat there scratching their heads. Turn it into a fight. Turn it into something that is so resolutely anti-football that you would never watch it again, but you walk away from not losing. If you're looking at the quality of the players that Forest have got, and we have, again, mentioned and we've spoken before about recruitment, they've not brought in a consistent batch of players that would take this team into the top 10 at all. That's down to the recruitment, that's down to where they spent the money, that's down to whoever brought these players and whoever wanted these players in and who puts them together. So this team on paper, the team that, as you say, Matt, was picked going into it, yeah, rub your hands together, they can do something, they can get results at Goodison Park. Not if they turn up and don't perform. If there's no fight, if there's no ambition to win the game, let alone just to be there not to lose it, then you find yourself in that position where it is then compounded by everything we've spoken about so far, and we will do in just a second, decision-making from the officials.
Decision then, Greg.
Poor decisions won't get. I mean, you say that, and then someone will bring something out. Well, this decision was in the final game, in the final minute, and it was never a penalty, but we got a penalty, and someone stayed up, someone went down. I understand that. But the precariousness of the position is self-made, completely self-made.
Do us a favour, as Tony says, before I throw it to Greg. If you haven't already, there's 600 people with us, so if you could hit like, that would be great. A few people say they don't like our club at the minute, but do like this podcast if you can. Right, the first penalty decision was at 0-0, I think, Greg, the Reina one, so I'll ask you about it. Of the three, it was kind of the most marginal for me, but what do you think, it was a penalty?
I don't think it was the most marginal, and it's only ever... All the pundits, especially the Match of the Day ones, I couldn't believe how clear they were. Oh, it's the two I hate, to be honest. I forget his name. He's so boring.
One was Danny Murphy, wasn't it?
Yeah, Danny Murphy, the most boring pundit on earth. And of course, he was going to go, like, it reminds me of Droopy Dog. Just like,
Gary Neville made him say that.
Yeah, so of course, Danny Murphy came out against Forrest. But the guy gets kicked in the back of the ankle. And they're saying, oh, but he planted his foot before he went down. That's a split second thing that took him to not have the ball. Of course he's going down. He's got booted in the side of the ankle. He then plants his foot and he's gone. It was a penalty. You've got kicked in the back of the ankle. within the box, penalty every single day for me. I don't care about what he does after and he tries to make it look a bit worse or what have you. He gets booted in the back of the ankle when he's got the ball in the penalty box. So I don't get this thing about it not being because he makes a bit of a meal of it after. He's blooming lost the ball within a split second because he's been booted. So yeah, it's a penalty for me. And if it was given, the one thing I will agree with Murphy on, if it was given, it wouldn't have been reversed, which kind of takes his point and batters it, because he's saying if he'd have given it, it would have been a penalty. So yeah.
People in the comments, Temps, making the right, a very fair point. Anthony Gordon got the same penalty against West Ham and has had it before. I think Brennan got one for us last season that was pretty similar, where he planted his foot. So was it a penalty for you?
Yeah, send him to the screen. He can still objectively make a decision at that point. I have a lot of respect, in fact, for the ref that goes to the screen and then doesn't give it. That's all things considered. That's not always going to the screen automatically given. And there are marginal cases. And I think this falls into that. Trust is right. Enough to have a debate, enough to ask. You need three angles first and foremost to make an informed decision. It's not one of those cut and dried one where you see it from the broadcast camera, bang, penalty straight away. It's one of those, I need to see that again. And Ashley Young's been clumsy and looked every one of his 38 years, didn't he, in all of these incidents. Send him to the screen, let him deny it if he needs to, but let him make an objective decision once he's seen four angles rather than had to make a split decision at match pace.
Yeah, refs don't get sent to the screen now, though, do they? That's another thing that renders it a bit redundant. It's just backing up the ref's on-field decision 99% of the time, no matter what. Perhaps if you want to add anything to that, you can, but I think the next thing was the first goal. I thought it was terrible.
It's hard to... So you're asking us whether we think it's a penalty or not, but a lot of what happens on a football pitch, as Temps was saying, is open to subjective discussion and also debate, which is literally the same thing. But the reaction of Rayner is, I think, overly dramatic. But then to class something as overly dramatic in the Premier League makes no sense whatsoever, because players go down at the drop of a hat. The fact that he has hit his heel and not got anywhere near the ball, all these I totally agree with and can see why. If he'd pointed to the spot, I could have absolutely got along with it being a penalty. But the thing that is frustrating and baffles us all, and it will be in the next couple of questions as well, is you've literally got the technology to go and look at it. That's why this is what infuriates me. Either have it and use it properly or don't have it at all. Yes, this is a bit of a hypothetical tangent, but that's what fuels conspiracy theory. If you didn't have if it was a split second decision made in the moment, you could go, oh, it's a crap decision. It was the wrong one. I had one look at it and that was it. That then you can take on the chin. The challenge from Ashley Young as a winger 10 years ago, with the same tackle on him, he's hitting the deck, he's asking the ref, that's got to be a penalty. So that one, I can absolutely see the frustration. I would have been screaming for a penalty. In the modern game, I think it is a penalty. And it's messy enough to really ask the question and at least be told by VAR that you need to look at it.
Good. Okay. So they say that's a penalty. And I think it was. The goal, I'm probably doing the chronology wrong here, but I think they go 1-0 up next. Talk us through it, Prats. What's Morgan Gibbs-White doing? What's Danilo doing? Should Sells be doing better?
Well, nothing. No one's doing anything.
Yeah.
No one's doing anything. It's a bit of a throwback, but you defend like your footballing life depends on it, i.e. if you're in a relegation battle, i.e. if you're playing against a team that's in the same relegation battle to fall out the Premier League. There is that question. Again, I mean, if it had been another goalkeeper in goal, it'd have been getting absolutely battered for that type of for allowing that one to go in. Because Sells has got a bit more. There's a bit more of a novelty factor about him being slightly newer. I still think that type of shot from that type of distance, it's one of them where you go, come on, we've got to do better there. And generational goalkeepers have come out screaming at the defenders in front of him that they should have closed down better, more aggressively. Morgan's done so many good things and he's a very, very good footballer. And I would say he's Forest's best creative player by quite a stretch.
but he's nowhere near consistent enough to be the player that plays them to complete safety throughout a season. But the other side of it, where the kind of muck and nettles of it all, just didn't have it yesterday, did they? And that, again, the goals really do typify that. You've got to, or at least go through the motions of showing that you're trying to get close down to people and try and get into the game and affect the game, because they are such fine margins. Forest are not going to turn around and put four or five goals past the team, are they, at all? They don't have the firepower for it. They don't have the clinical finishing of a team that can do that. So every single shot on goal, every single attempt at their goal has got to be seen with horrendous affront. It's like, you are not getting anywhere near having a shot on goal against us. Whether I come flying out, whether someone else comes flying out, whether a third person comes flying out. Not willy-nilly, but doing it in the sense of that is the most important thing. Protect the cage. And that wasn't the case. It wasn't the case at all.
If I play devil's advocate very slightly, is there a thing where you think, okay, it's Idrissa Gueye that's got the ball. He's never going to score from there. Let him have a shot and we'll be all right. Is there anything in that? I don't think there is, personally. I think I agree.
But it's a point to make. I mean, it's a bit of a leap. I'm sure they thought that about Vincent Kompany when he ran and smashed it in the top corner. But if you think that, the one time you think that and don't act on it is potentially the one time that sends you down. You might have one chance to do that. And to think about an isolated moment in context at exactly the same time, of course, is ridiculous. And it's way too hard to comprehend. But your job's to stop the opposition.
Mm.
Very straightforward.
I've just seen the clock's really ticking. You've got to go at 10:40, Potts, haven't you? We're going to have to let you go before the end of this. We'll have to let you go before the end of this quickly.
Sorry, it's all right.
We'd be going quicker than this.
I've got a Zoom call with PJ Moyle and Mark Lambert.
Just give him the script there, for the weekend. He's got to give him the script for the weekend.
Yeah, so at 3:04, can we do this? Can we box that pencil that one in?
Greg, you were going to come in there, weren't you?
I was just talking about let them shoot Wes Morgan against Notts County. I just thought that goal straight away.
Exactly. Right. I'll keep with you, Greg, for the second penalty, and we'll try and rattle through these bits. I thought this was as nailed on as it gets. And Young's reaction told you to me that he knew it was a penalty. What was your take on it?
Have you seen that amazing picture of the Everton fans behind the goal as well? Yeah. It's like, fascinating. The handball rule changed again this year, didn't it? And they get away with it by saying hand in a natural position. But my biggest argument with that ridiculous rule is it's okay it being in a natural position, but if that stops the flight of the ball hitting our player in the, 4 yards from goal, which it was going to and probably going to be a goal, natural position or not, you have to give them. If that's the excuse they use, then it's not good enough, really, because it's such open for interpretation. But the way his hand's out to the side, the way you see half an hour later, a penalty given at Wembley, probably less obvious than ours, the inconsistency of it, the way VAR didn't act on it, it's disgraceful. Again, I can't believe we're sitting here today talking about worse decisions than we've already had this season, and 3 in 1 game. I mean, you can only guess how I'm going to say about the third one by saying that, but it was just so blatant purely because the flight of the ball, where it was heading, I think it was Wood, wasn't it? It was going straight to him. You know, it doesn't matter if the player didn't mean to handball it. He wasn't trying to save it from going in. But it hits his hand going straight to our player, so close to the goal, while his hand's out on the side. It's a penalty. And how anyone can say it isn't, for me, is just beyond, like, where is this game going?
Temps?
PK, no question. Ashley Young knew it. Everton fans knew it. Callum Hudson-Odoi knew it. How they've dodged that bullet, I will never, ever know.
Good. Right. Because Pops is going to go, I'm going to jump right ahead and get his take on
that. Let me give you my 2 pence on this. I think proximity of the hand and when you're looking at it to counterbalance of where you are, it's, for me, it's not absolute stonewall at all. I think looking at a lot of the stuff in the Championship, and again, apologies for using that as an example, they're leaning towards that type of proximity as being not the case for a penalty, and it's moving more towards that. It's not akin to someone blasting the ball at you from 4 yards away and you can't move your hands. There is a very, there's sort of differences to the Ashley Young one, but the I can absolutely see why it's aggrieved. I can
so perhaps see in that case when Tarkowski stood like Jesus on the cross, knowing Chris Wood's about to do an overhead kick. What is the advantage they are trying to gain by having that body shape?
Well, the advantage is to stop that is on a natural body position. That's there to stop. Lower down, I think is way more open to interpretation than that. That's handball. That's absolutely categorically handball. Ironically, it's not categorically handball because that debate didn't go that way either. But once again, we're talking about it subjectively. The technology is there for him to go and have a look at it to then make his decision on whether he thinks that Ashley Young can get his hand in quicker. That why is it dangling out there, and what kind of reason it has to be for it to be there. But as Greg said, I mean, intentional or not, if it stops the ball going across to Chris Wood, who might possibly have a tap in, then that's where the debate comes in. But given what I've seen this season and the refereeing bodies that I've spoken to, that kind of accidental, can't get out of the way handball, they're moving more broadly towards that not being handball.
Right, before we let you go, Prots, I'll skirt to the end and ask your take on the relegation battle and if we're going down, or will we be saved by Luton, or can we save ourselves?
Well, I mean, given where the team finds itself now with the points, what they've accrued so far in the games played, then to have it in a situation where you are coming towards these last few games of the season where in effect it's in your own hands, then great. But then you've got to take into account who you're coming up against, don't you? Having seen all three of Luton, Burnley and Sheffield United, it's been incredibly tough seasons for them across the board, hasn't it? And you were talking yesterday on the pod about what you'd seen from Luton Town, who punching above the weight. But unfortunately, they're coming up against ginormous football clubs that have got real clout, haven't they? And it's been really, really tough for them. I still think out of the four teams that are down there, and this may be damning with faint praise, given what I've seen from Forest, they are better than the three that are in the bottom three. Whether that means that you then deserve to stay up by virtue of not getting the results is a different question entirely. But I can see them being safe. You're just very, very wary, of course. Games coming up, whether free hits, whether you call them that, I don't know. But they could be, it could be all changed off the back of next weekend, couldn't it?
True. Yeah, I think we'll probably be all right. Right, we've still got Prots for a couple more minutes, so I might then go. Unless you want, do you need to go, Prots? I'll let you go if you need to go now.
No. Do you know where I'm going? Where are you? Did I tell you this yesterday? No, because go on.
Someone put a funny comment in that you need to go and get your beard re-tarmacked, which is one of the great phrases I've seen.
Right. In reality, it's nowhere near as dark, but any screen that I go on, it just goes jet black. It's ridiculous.
Because every time you dye it, Prots, it goes jet black every time you dye it.
Every time I mat it on and leave it on. I think I'm leaving it on too much. There's a colleague of yours that I do another podcast with, which is talking about Hull City, Matt. So, well, Hull City can wait. Christ, they've blown the chances of getting in the championship playoffs, haven't they? Bloody hell.
I forgot that was the reason. It was Dan Cook, Danscape, who made that comment, which did make me laugh. It's good something can make us laugh today, so fair play to that. Right.
And if it's me, great.
Oh, where to next? Does Chris Wood have to score there, Greg, when Pickford grows his arms and saves
it? Oh, what
a
save. Yeah, he does, but I think you've got to give credit to Pickford. You know, and he needs... Go one up on a pair of shorts with Pickford. They're just a bit too uncomfortably tight. But yeah, what a save. I thought it was a brilliant save. Chris Wood's going to be gutted how it didn't go in. But yeah, credit to the goalkeeper on that one. And he celebrated rightfully so, like it just scored a goal. So yeah.
He's a bit much, isn't he?
Oh, I don't like the blues.
He's a bit much, isn't he? Yeah. Wondering that on Monday at the bridge, was he? Jesus. Yeah,
Ball's still in play when he's doing that as well. Crack on, mate. Jesus.
Yeah. One thing I've always loved about Jordan Pickford, his tweets are still up when he was like 14, 15. And he's got one that says, "Hate mum and dad, won't even let me have Freeview."
dear me. I suppose the thing was, Temps, I mean, we can debate the performance, but we only created that and Morgan's chance in the whole game. And there's the penalty shouts, obviously, but there's the question of how clear goal-scoring chances they were. I think the third one was. But is that enough to create that? And does Morgan have to score as well?
Yeah, Chris Wood should have scored. His track record suggests he does score, but credit to Pickford. That is keeper saving that. That is, he smothered it. He's got out there quick. He's done everything that Danilo didn't. If Jordan Pickford was playing centre mid for Forest yesterday, the result might have been a little bit different. I think we look far more dangerous when we've got threats on both wings. We didn't have that yesterday. Rayner likes to tuck in, likes to get on the ball in. Morgan gives White space. Elanga perhaps not fit enough to start, and we weren't quite getting enough out of Origi. So I think that the way we get back to being the attacking threat that we were early part of the year, certainly against Fulham and for flashes in other games, is to start these two boys. Elanga wasn't quite ready yesterday. I get the feeling Nuno would have liked to have picked him. And I just wonder if in 3-4 days' time, we'll be debating about Yatesy and Elanga coming back into this side. I just thought we looked blunt. There's a point being made about Callum Hudson-Odoi having been worked out in the sense that he likes to stop his defender, come back inside. First thought is shoot, second thought is cross. I don't think that's the case. I think he can go both ways. He was very willing to run at Ashley Young yesterday. And if he collects a penalty or two for his endeavour, we're giving his performance more praise than he's ultimately got. But in the absence of Elanga, I think he's only just 22. That jarred me how young this kid is and how much potential he's got. We need to get him fit and back in this side because he's just a different type of threat and has another dimension to his going forward. Played off scraps going forward, didn't take our chances, and the result's the result. I think we'd have been lauding a 0-0 in the end because it would have signified a better defensive performance from those two in centre mid. That was, I suppose, the biggest point I wanted to make today, apart from the penalties. You can't be that passive centrally against any Premier League opposition and expect to come away with anything at all from a game.
Yeah, in the last 60 seconds before we let you go, Rod, so I think Temps makes a good point there. We actually defended the ball into our box well for once, where we could have taken some positivity from that. But the second goal, just your thoughts on that before we let you go, it's almost a carbon copy of the first, isn't it?
Yeah, very similar. And it's that key word that Temps has used is passive. And listen to the chaps yesterday on the pod, it was exactly the same thing. And it is... It's kind of now or never crunch time, isn't it? It's those kind of real fine margins where every single mistake, every single foot put wrong, every single shot on goal has to be deemed to be, in footballing terms, life or death. It's got to be that important within the confines of a football pitch, as we all know. And if not the manager's saying that, then leadership of the players, and I know the finger's been pointed at Joe and Yatesy and the lads that have been there for a long time. Is it a noisy team to you? Is it a team that gives each other that type of impetus? If it's not you blocking it, it's you telling the person in front of you to get out and block it. It's the goalkeeper screaming to get his team up and away from his goal to give him enough time to be able to see the ball heading towards his net. So that again, it's just, and it's hard because I read a few of the comments where they're saying about Matt being positive, and we know Greg, it very much glass half full. And I can understand why people listen to it thinking that the reality is really quite stark, because it is, because you look at refereeing decisions, season ticket prices, tweets, all this stuff, which is just crap. All this stuff, which is not what you get into football for, getting your pants pulled down for hundreds of pounds a year, getting stuck into conversations where on a more balanced footing, you're going, oh my God, why am I talking about referee corruption? This is ridiculous, but I'm getting sucked into it because of that and because of this, because of that opinion on Twitter and that opinion on TV and that opinion that I've seen in there. It takes away from what the game is, which is about hard work. It's about talent, creativity and application. Forest have talent and creativity. The application, I don't think, broadly across the team wasn't there yesterday. That sense of alarm bells going off, not just in the season, but in the game. Like, we're really in this, lads. Christ almighty. Stop that shot. Stop that cross. Defend that ball into the box. And ironically, as you were saying yesterday, set pieces where you're looking at it thinking, oh, God, we could be undone here. That part of the game was broadly right, wasn't it? But that's why Forest are where they are, because they can't do all of it
at once in the same game more often than they don't. So you were great at set pieces, terrible at open play defensive shots. On another day, you'd be great at open play closing down and terrible in the box. That's why Forest are fourth bottom. That's exactly why, because they can't do it all the time in every single game more often than they don't.
True. Right, we shall let you go. Perhaps you're a good man. I think you'll go talk about.
Right, I'm off to go to Cairn Hall City now. So thanks for that. Bye.
Is it with Baz Cooper?
It's Baz Cooper.
Yeah. Tell him I said hello. Great guy.
He was texting me more yesterday about the Forest game than anything to do with the championship. Yeah. That shows how unprofessional he is as a journalist.
Yeah.
Anyway, chat, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully you leave it on a light note. I'll try and keep you all shining and happy. Love you all lots. And thanks for listening and commenting, everybody.
See you later.
Cheers, Prutz.
Bye. Right, let's talk about him.
He made a point there about effort and commitment. I thought, and leadership. I think Morgan last season, would he have closed down more? Is it typify? I don't know what's missing from this team. I feel like he charges Gay down more there last season, and we have lost. We had under Cooper, and we've shifted under Nuno to be more attacking. Have we just lost that heart, Greg? I don't know.
I think we're in a very similar position to last season, aren't we? So it's not that we've got worse as such. It's just we're not any better. I think Gibbs White is asked to do more this season. He hasn't got the outlier Johnson and Taiwo. So with him doing more, there's more mistakes, you know, highlighted from him. He seemed to be quite far back yesterday as well. He was defending a lot, and I don't know. I just feel like that he may well feel the weight of this team's on his shoulders, and it'd be great to get someone next season that can take a bit of that off for him if he's still with us, which we all hope he is, obviously. But yeah, it's just the more of the ball we have, like yesterday, 60%, the more things like this are going to get highlighted. And yeah, I mean, none of them had a great game yesterday, did they? But I think it'd be a bit unjust to hammer Gibbs White for his performance as such. I know we're not, but
no, I just think it was kind of symbolic. I mean, someone said in the comments he did close down really well against Fulham. He did. It just feels like symptomatic of the whole performance that Morgan didn't play well, Danilo didn't play well. They're a bit inconsistent. Go on, Tamsi, like you want to come in.
Yeah, well, just going to say Gibbs White definitely has a sixth gear, doesn't he? And he found it against Fulham. And he has this ability when he can see that he's enjoying the ball, his first couple of twists, turns, passes come off, that he's going to be running the show. He just finds another level. He didn't find that yesterday. He found it against Fulham. That's probably the best example of just watching him dictate everything there is about a game. Want the ball all the time. Gee his teammates up. We've seen clips, the Man U clip, the Fulham clip, where it is him who's giving the motivational chat to the boys. And dressing rooms and teams become self-policing. Once one person shows a never say die, committed to everything kind of attitude, you're kind of embarrassed or positively energized to follow that and to be part of it. And I think when the spark isn't coming from Morgan, we do spend a little bit more time on the back foot. We can't get up the pitch quite so easily. We can't retain the ball in the middle third, and possession ends up fizzling out like it did for the first 30 minutes of yesterday's game. I think we said last week, when Morgan plays well, we play well, because it's symbolic of us being on the ball, having possession in the right areas and bringing other players in. He was off it yesterday, and that clip of him not closing down the first one was symptomatic of it, but that's not the primary reason why he's out there. He's out to be creative, to bring in the wingers, to progress us up the pitch and to get goals and assists. We needed more from Danilo and Dominguez, and we didn't get it. And that's what's disappointing. The Gay's point that is correct. I think the stat was up on Sky yesterday. He's had 100 shots from outside the box in the Premier League, and that was the second time he's bagged. So I don't think that's in your mind, though. See ball, close ball down, stop opponent causing any kind of threat on the goal. And if Sells is balanced and stood in the middle at that point, as he should have been, it's a pretty, pretty routine save. And then the game evolves from there. But what would Morgan Gibbs-White do differently? Yeah, he'd work harder in that moment, but he needs to demand more from Danilo and Dominguez for me.
The clock is ticking. I'm going to let these chaps go, especially Temps, because he's probably got to get back to some work. I don't know. Greg
I've got a meeting at 11.
Oh, okay. Right. Really quickly then. Really quickly. Thank you very much, Thomas Brigby, for becoming a member. John Glenn for becoming a member. Appreciate the support, chaps. And thank you very much to Tom Hutchinson for the $4.99 and saying it's a great podcast. And we can't say the same about referees, although we appreciate your words about the podcast. You've got a meeting at 11. Okay. Just quickly, any final thoughts on the relegation battle, Greg? Are we staying up or going down?
We're staying up against Burnley on the last day of the season. I think it's us v Burnley. I've completely changed on it. They're on a roll. It's finally clicking. He's stuck to his guns all season with how he plays and hasn't changed it, and they seem to be doing it. But they've got a horrendous run in, and I think we'll just pick up enough points. But it's close. Even I'm not 100% now, but I think we'll do it against Burnley last day of the season.
If we're playing Burnley on the last day of the season needing a result, I don't think we're getting it. So I think we need to be safe by then. Sorry, I just look at the team and don't see it. So I think we need to be safe by then. Temps, what about you?
Oh, mate, don't take me to Burnley on the last day of the season. Let me smash Sheffield United a week earlier and get it done at that point. So I'll be slightly more optimistic, not because I see a massive upturn from us. I just think this is the year where the bottom three have been particularly poor. So there's an autopsy to do for sure. We haven't achieved anything like what we wanted to achieve. And every threat of a positive run in form has proved to be a bit of a false dawn. So we find ourselves where we are on merit, notwithstanding the points deduction. I think we'll get it done at Sheffield United, and that will be the decisive moment.
Yeah, I think we'll stay up. I think we need... it's so bad, the standard at the bottom is so low, that I think one more win... we'll do it, and I think we will get it at Sheffield United. I know they did play quite well against Burnley, but they still conceded four goals. They are terrible, and I just have enough faith left that we'll beat Sheffield United and maybe even get a point at Chelsea. They're a very fallible team against Chelsea, so we'll see. But it's been an awful season. I can't wait for it to end. Thanks very much to Lyle Taylor's Pink Curls for becoming a member. Appreciate that support as well. And I'm really rattling through this because I do want to get to any of the business from these chaps. But I must say a word to our second sponsor, the episode, Brewbacker. You know what they do by now if you've watched this podcast. Any problems with noise related with your business, they are the people for you. And I'll put a full link to their website in the description for this episode. Any other business, Greg Mitchell?
I really wanted to talk longly about Sam Perkins and his incredible achievement yesterday, finally completing the London Marathon for Stand Against MND, but I will give more time to that because it's just amazing, which I haven't got now, unfortunately. And a big happy birthday to the Danny Murphy of Forest fans, the Grim Reaper himself, who's always in the comments, Steve Allen. Happy birthday to him. And just... thank you to everyone yesterday who came up to me. I was expecting quite a bit of stick, to be honest, with how we've gone about the season ticket pricing and, you know, some of the comments online. I was a little bit worried about the game yesterday, but the amount of people that came up to me and said, keep doing what we're doing, and, you know, hearing from fans who've had their seats removed without warning and all this types of stuff. So it's kind of kept that fire in my belly, and we're off to speak to the club shortly and see what's what. So, I'll keep you informed on that. But
you do some social media consultancy, Greg?
No, I am not. No, hopefully they'll give me the password. That'll be fun.
Yeah, we'll try and keep people informed of that if we hear anything. Temps, anything from you?
Just a light note to end it on. So a mate of mine, John Oldsey, the physio at Forest, and he was on the broadcast a couple of times yesterday because he obviously picked Nico out of the crowd and tended to Morgan Gibbs-White. He's been getting hammered on Twitter for his extravagant sideburns. I think there was my favourite couple of clips. One said we should get another 6 points taken off us with the physio's haircut. And the other one was like a cartoon of him talking to Gibbs-White. Morgan's asking, am I out for a while now? And the response was definitely maybe, which is obviously a little Oasis riff for him. But his haircut is iconic. He's an absolute 10 out of 10 bloke. And it just reminded me of a story he told me when he was the physio for the England 17s when Cooper was in charge. And all these 16-year-old kids, including Morgan Gibbs-White in that squad, were just hammering him for his haircut. So he said, all right, you lot, if you don't like it, go and win this tournament and you can cut them off. And there's a brilliant scene, if you know to look out for it, after they've won it. It might be at Emil Smith Rowe from memory, but someone goes into the physio bag, grabs these scissors, and they're chasing Oldie around the pitch so they can nail him down and cut his sideburns off because they won the 17s World Cup and the Coupes. So yeah, in amongst all of the disappointment and carnage yesterday, Forest Twitter has given me a laugh at John Alty's expense. So yeah, I just want to give him a shout out, all the Forest medical staff, and hope they can keep everybody on the pitch between now and the end of the season.
Hopefully so. That was a nasty one, Nico. Glad he was all right. Happy birthday to Gary Tolson's daughter. And Mark, sorry for your loss. I see that about your friend, Jane. One other happy birthday from me is when Greg started saying about the miserable person of this podcast, I thought he'd say happy birthday, Mikey Clark, but he wasn't. But it is Mikey's birthday today, so happy birthday, Mikey.
Oh, no, that's a miss from me. That sorry.
Happy birthday, Mikey.
Yeah, his card's in the post.
Save me a text, isn't it? Save me a text.
Yeah, we've done our bit now. And the other one I was going to say, I mentioned this the other week, about neuro-walking football. The guys who do that wanted me to give it a plug. So I think this week is World Parkinson's Awareness Week, and they entered the team yesterday in the Parkinson's Cup, and I hope they did really well. But if you want to get involved, it's every Friday, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Forest Sports Zone on Gregory Boulevard, £4 per session. I think it's anyone with any kind of neurological condition. So it says here Parkinson's, or if you're recovering from a stroke. But thought I would give that a plug to end on. Right, back tomorrow with Fletch. We'll have a chat about the state of the nation, which will be interesting. Not the nation. On against that, the state of Forest and football, and then I'm not sure what the plan is for Wednesday, but then we'll start looking ahead to the City game, and that'll be fun talking about that. Right, Greg Mitchell, thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. Enjoyed that one. Weirdly,
weirdly, yeah. So did I. Weirdly. Oh, and a shout out as well to Paul Murphy, who has started his walk. I thought he might have finished his walk. I don't know, but good luck, Paul. And well done to anyone who ran the marathon yesterday as well. I think Rob Johnston was one of those chaps. Temp, thank you very much.
See you soon, fellas.
Yep, see you soon, everyone. Have a good day. Hopefully all this chat helps you feel a bit better about yesterday, although probably not. But in the meantime, have a good day, and we shall see you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.